Chapter 19. Devon's second discussion with Lady Hightower went as poorly as the first, his host turning instantly angry the moment he pushed his proposal forward. Fortunately, Garvis, whom Devon could see cared for Ariane and Elaine a great deal, held a warmer opinion of Devon's plan and had agreed to help him implement it without Lady Hightower's knowledge. Matters settled, Devon enjoyed a relaxed evening with the ladies, Elaine occupying most of his time with queries about nearly everything imaginable, from sabercats to carvings and even guns. Ariane, while attentive, apparently hadn't forgiven him for even broaching his idea in the first place and had watched him all evening as a concerned mother might a rebellious child she feared would disobey. Her preoccupation with showing a common clerk the virtues and quality of Hightower was strange, and he couldn't make sense of it. Why would she care what a clerk thought of the hospitality of her estate? After dinner, Devon rose and stifled a fake yawn. "I'm afraid I'm feeling a little worn this evening, and will retire to the inn immediately." "I shall see to your horse," Garvis said.
"Hold one moment, if you will, Mr. Garvis," Lady Hightower ordered, just as Mr. Garvis turned to go. "Before Mr. Harper leaves, would you see that the ledgers are properly locked and stored in the turret office?"
"I have already taken care of that, my lady," he confirmed.
Satisfied, she rose, and Mr. Garvis bowed and left. Devon tried to keep the smugness off his face. Everything had proceeded just as he had planned it. He hoped Garvis could execute his part of the scheme without the discovery of his master, or he would find himself out of work the next morning. While Devon took no pleasure in going against the lady's wishes, he did derive some satisfaction that his rather underhanded actions would protect Hightower and two ladies that had come to mean more to him than he had intended when he walked up to the doorstep 4 days ago. Again he sensed the will of the Eternal Flame pushing and pulling him where it needed him to go. Killing Lady Hightower's husband for Emile's tarnished honour had turned to one of his biggest regrets. Now came a chance, in some small way, to make restitution for his sins toward Lady Hightower, a most excellent woman. He gathered his coat, hat, and carving bag and faced Ariane, who folded her arms across her chest and regarded him severely.
"I will expect you early tomorrow, Mr. Harper," she stated flatly, "and I don't want to hear another word about your plan. It is out of the question."
"What plan, Ariane?" Elaine interjected.
"Never mind, Elaine. It is a private matter between Mr. Harper and me."
Devon bowed to them both.
"I assure you, Lady Hightower, I won't utter another word on the subject."
She eyed him suspiciously, and he lowered his eyes to appear more defeated.
"Very well," she said after a searching pause. "Good evening to you, Mr. Harper."
The door closed, and Devon hopped down the steps and waited for Mr. Garvis to arrive with the horse. His mind raced, nerves buzzing in anticipation of his journey. He would stop at Hightower's Taverns first, spreading the rumour that he was carrying a special package to Belshire for Lady Hightower. With any luck, the news would travel quickly. He would leave that night and strike out on the road, cutting into the wilderness when day came. The only worry was the horse. His current mount didn't possess the endurance of Cyril and might fail him in a pinch.
"Here you are, Mr. Harper," Mr. Garvis said, handing the reins to Devon.
Devon mounted.
"Is everything in place?" "Just as you asked for," he answered. "I've packed some extra food in the bags and an extra water skin for good measure. I'm grateful you're willing to take this chance for the lady."
"Ah, one moment," Devon exclaimed, remembering something. Reaching into his carving bag, he pulled out the two carved candles.
"This one is for you, and the other for Missa."
Garvis grabbed them eagerly, smile overspreading his face.
"Now," Devon continued, "if you concentrate..."
But Garvis had jumped ahead of Davin's thought, and a flame sprung to life on the delicate wick that stayed steady, unaffected by the night's breeze. Garvis passed his hand over it.
"It doesn't burn. This is extraordinary."
Devon, forgotten, Mr. Garvis turned and eagerly returned to the house. Devon smiled at the retreating servant and set off down the short lane that led to the road. The moon hung just over the top of the tree-lined hills, swollen and bright, providing ample light for a chilly night ride. Breathing in the crisp air, he coaxed the horse into a trot to warm him up. The trip to Belshire normally took a solid 2 days. He wanted to trim that time. The road passed directly through the Hightower township, and as he crested a low hill, he caught sight of its lights punctuating the windows of the houses and businesses just 2 miles ahead. Again, the troubling sensation of wrongness hit him like a bucket of cold water, and he jabbed his boot heels into his horse's flanks. With a jolt, it surged into a gallop, the air rushing by, pushing the brim of his hat back. A shot rang out from somewhere to his left, the bullet whizzing just behind him as the horse tore through the night. This was more serious than he had imagined. They had staked out the road. They couldn't know if he had the ledgers, but whoever stood to lose from the ledger's contents probably assumed the Queen's underclerk knew more than he should about whatever secrets they contained. He chanced to look behind him. Another shot. A muzzle flashed from a thicket just off the road behind him, and a bullet ripped into his saddlebags. Davin hunkered down over the horse's neck, every pulse of the beast's legs inflating his chances of escape. The town's lights steadily neared, bobbing up and down in his vision. The third report from the rifle sounded distant and was errant enough not to register any effect near him. In moments, the outer buildings of Hightower engulfed him, and he relaxed his pace and his posture, the horse's shod hooves sending up a racket on the cobblestone streets. His plans changed. He would not take the time to hang around in taverns, though he had to ensure the general public knew he had the ledgers, so that any would-be thieves or assassins would leave Hightower Manor in peace. His recent run-in provided him with an opportunity, and guiding his horse to the first tavern, he jumped off in a bustle and banged open the door of the winsome maid.
"Someone shot at me!" he exclaimed to a surprised and subdued crowd. "I'm carrying a special package to Belshire for Lady Hightower, and I think someone's trying to steal it. I'm not from here. Could someone tell me where the sheriff's office is?"
Several mumbled answers and contradictory pointing fingers from inebriated patrons informed him of exactly where it probably wasn't, and he left, mounting his horse quickly. He had no intention of visiting the young sheriff, who would undoubtedly detain him while he investigated the matter. One more tavern stop to set rumours flying, and he would continue his journey. The Horned Head waited down a side street and was, Davin suspected, the source of the intruder that had menaced Hightower the night before. He repeated his "I'm going to Belshire with ledgers" routine to a more gruff and mean crowd that eyed him with suspicion and silence. Despite what Davin figured was a well-executed attempt at appearing desperate and distressed, an awkward silence mingled with the stench of vomit and sweat for several moments when Davin caught sight of a pistol being raised underneath a table. He dove out of the tavern as a shot, took a plug of wood out of the door and set his horse to rearing. His job was done. Clearly someone had set in motion a plan to get the ledgers back after the previous night's failure, and the deader the troublesome underclerk, the better. He hoped the murderous plots didn't include Ariane, and the thought of her in danger smote his heart. Before more bullets could fly, he mounted the horse and rode, considering a return to Hightower. Were the sheriff's men guarding the house trustworthy? Competent? If the villains behind the conspiracy believed he carried the ledgers, would they leave her be? He agonized for several moments before deciding he had to continue as he'd originally planned. The ledgers were the key. Even if Ariane had some dangerous knowledge, which she didn't, any accusations she might make would have no weight of proof behind them without the ledgers. Of course, the powers behind these attacks might not think so rationally. Resigned, he turned south and set off at a good clip until the lights of Hightower fell far behind and out of sight, and the sound of his horse's hooves echoed alone in the starlit night. Fearing another sentry south of the town, he didn't slow his pace until several miles had passed without incident. Steady now. Steady and quiet the rest of the way. The next morning, Davin snapped his head up and shook it. He had dozed in the saddle, as he had several times in the dead of the night, but movement ahead of him pulled him from slumber. He had to rub his eyes before he would believe them. There, in the pre-dawn grey, was a group of North people, the Ahuakatan, clustered on the side of the road near a stand of tall trees. There was one white-haired woman and two bald men in leather pants and jerkins, and they seemed just as surprised to see him as he was to see them. Davin stopped the horse and they hefted their packs, spears and bows, and darted away into the wilderness. While Bitamarchians didn't hunt and kill the Ahuakatan like the Cretesians, most considered them savage and unrefined. Davin had been called that himself, so he didn't put much stock in it. Still, it was odd that they were so far south.
He pushed the horse forward again at an easy pace, glancing into the woods but finding no trace of the Aua Katan he had seen. They were good in the wild, but he didn't trust his vision at the moment. Even the sun's brilliant blaze as it crested the ice-fire mountains to his left couldn't keep his heavy eyelids from dropping closed. He stopped and splashed water from a trickling stream on his face and chewed some bread to wake himself. But after dozing off and nearly pitching himself from the saddle a few miles down the road, he decided he could not avoid resting. He had too far left to go. Resigned, he steered his horse through a break in a leafy hedge and into a dewy green field where mist still lingered. He needed a few hours' rest, and he found a massive persimmon tree on a slight incline with a good view of the road. Staking out the horse near a rich tuft of broad spring grass, he leaned against the trunk, facing away from the road, and pulled his broad-brimmed hat over his eyes. Accustomed to sleeping outdoors, he drifted off quickly, only to be roused by a gun poking him in the shoulder. He startled awake and shoved his hat upwards, fearing he had been caught. The weathered, pruned face of a man holding a rifle and the bleating of sheep greeted him in the late morning light. Davon exhaled in relief. This was a shepherd, and likely the owner or tenant of the field. His hard, dark eyes pinned Davon to his spot.
"There are men up and down the road this morning looking for someone what matches your description. Say he shot up a place in Hightower."
Davon tried to grin pleasantly, wishing he had the gift of charisma and charm that other lords seemed to have in abundance. At least his recently trimmed beard and hair would lend him some respectability.
"I assure you I've not shot anyone, or anything, in Hightower. I'm just a clerk."
The man snorted.
"A clerk, are you? A bit tan for a clerk. Big gun for a clerk. I always travel armed in case of brigands or predatory animals, as I can see you do."
He wasn't convinced.
"Liar. Too tan for a clerk. Too big, too. You're a ruffian of some sort."
Hoofbeats on the road 100 yards behind the tree distracted them both, and the old shepherd leaned around the trunk to get a look.
"There's a couple of them. You just stay put or I'll blow a hole in your chest wide enough to shake hands through."
Davon couldn't believe his extraordinary ill luck. The shepherd stuck two dirty fingers in his mouth and whistled so loudly that Davon's horse shied back in surprise. Frantically, Davon took stock of his situation. The saddlebags sat by the tree with his rifle. The horse, now spooked, pulled at its stake some 30 feet away. His captor had his eyes on the road and was waving his hand to the riders. From his reclined position, Davon couldn't figure a way to stand and overpower the man quickly enough to avoid the promised cavernous hole in his chest. He needed a diversion, something to pull the old man's attention away from his prisoner and his gun just for a few moments. The scars on his chest started to itch and he reached up to scratch them. The shepherd returned his malevolent attention back on his prisoner. Davon had just raised his hands, in a gesture of innocence, when a fierce growl and the screaming of terrified sheep unnerved them both. From the deep grass to his right, a sabre cat tore into the field. In a heartbeat, it had punctured the neck of a fat, slow sheep on the edge of the herd. The shepherd swore and raised his gun, firing off a poorly aimed round that drilled his injured sheep in the hindquarters. The report of the gun momentarily scared the wary cat, but as soon as the echo of the shot settled, it dove in and began pulling its victim back toward nearby trees. Davon didn't waste the opportunity. Springing to his feet, he easily separated the old man from his gun and chucked the weapon out into the field as far as he could. "Good day," he said before sprinting for his saddlebags and his rifle. While the shepherd spouted off several different epithets that compared Davon to the offal of various domesticated animals, Davon collected his equipment and settled his horse. The riders still sat on the road, watching, perhaps intimidated by the sound of the gun. But once they saw their quarry run for his horse, they spurred their own and charged onto the field, further upsetting the sheep which had fled in that direction. Davon undid the stake and left it, and without time to attach his saddlebags properly, he threw them over his lap as he thundered away to the south, following the line of the road and riding hard. Shouting and hoofbeats followed him, echoing at a distance. Resting had been a mistake, after all. Someone was really, really desperate for the ledgers. The exposed fields and low hills stretched around him like a green sea, with islands of trees and occasional flotillas of hedges and bushes.
With a trained eye, Davin watched for small gullies worn by rainwater and kept an eye out for low rock walls left by farmers who cleared the fields of debris in the past. Expertly, he guided his horse around and over every obstacle, widening the gap between him and his pursuers. Two dogged him from the rear, and from time to time he thought he heard more men in the direction of the road, and even some off in the wilderness to his left, though he couldn't be sure. After the initial sprint, the pace slowed as the terrain gradually turned more wild and difficult, pastures and fields giving way to untamed meadows and ever more expansive groupings of fir and aspen. The Icefire Mountains grew steadily in the west, and the inclines and declines of the hills more rocky and severe. Here Davin thought he had the advantage. Here he could get lost, hunker down, and perhaps get an idea of how many men trailed him. He stopped for a moment to get the saddlebags properly affixed. An afternoon storm gathered in the south, high grey clouds gradually washing northward like a dull, ponderous tide. A few distant cracks of thunder rumbled in the skies. He pushed forward out of a fragrant copse of green spruce and into a rock-strewn meadow. Again his nerves tingled in warning, as they had done twice before. He jabbed his heels into his frothing horse again. Wind whipping by his ears, he barreled across the clearing with white-knuckled hands on the reins, weaving in and out of clumps of rocks that would trip the horse. A rifle report was all the warning Davin had before a bullet blasted into his horse's head, and then another into his thigh. The horse went limp and crumpled to the ground, sending Davin over the top. With reflexes he never knew he had, he tucked his shoulder and rolled, tumbling over the rough ground. When he and the horse settled, it took several moments for his bearings to return and the pain from his wounded thigh to register. Glancing back at the horse, a quick realization hit him. He was hit on the front of this thigh. The horse was struck on the left side of its head. He had ridden into a trap when the riflemen were skilled. One gunman waited to his left and the other somewhere just in front of him. Staying low to the ground, he scooted back toward his own rifle and ammunition bag in the low grass to the left of his dead steed. A knee-high crumble of rocks provided scant cover from one gunman, and he edged toward the back of the fallen horse for some cover against the other. In moments, he suspected his pursuers would gallop up from behind with possibly more arriving from the road. He shoved a bullet in the breech loader as a shot from one of the gunmen whizzed overhead, and another thudded into the corpse of the horse. Rolling onto his belly, he propped his gun on the dead horse's flanks and stared ahead, squinting. At about 70 yards, he spotted him, the dome of a hat and the barrel of a gun sticking up above a fallen log in a small stand of trees. He was reloading. Davin waited for the head to rise just a few more inches. As he sighted the shot, the sound of a horse approaching from behind him begged for his attention. He kept his aim steady, waiting. At last the head poked above the log and Davin squeezed the trigger, the bullet slamming into the forehead of the would-be assassin, sending him to the ground in a spray of red. Davin rolled off the horse and reloaded. Another bullet chipped the rocks to his right as the other sniper tried to pin him down. Gun loaded, Davin crawled up against the rocks and faced backwards. The horse and his rider had yet to emerge from the same copse he had passed through before crossing the meadow. While he waited, the incoming clouds extinguished the last of the sunshine. The approaching horse came slowly now, the rider no doubt exercising caution after hearing gunfire. But come he did, dark horse emerging at a cautious pace from the shadows of the trees, the rider holding a pistol out and surveying the meadow for signs of danger. Davin dropped him with a shot to his heart. The horse reared and dumped its rider, running wildly into the field. Davin rolled onto his belly, noting the blood pooling by his thigh. With no proper bandages, he had to use one of his saber-tooth knives to cut a strip of cloth from his shirt. He bound his leg with it, all while trying not to raise his head above the level of the stones. The third gunman hadn't fired a shot since Davin had managed to wedge himself against the rocks, which meant he was either very patient or repositioning himself. In either case, Davin knew he couldn't stay put. The field provided only sporadic cover, and getting from one spot to the next would expose him for too long. Any man that could hit a horse in the head while it ran across a field could easily drop a man with a wounded leg as he stumbled for cover. Since the meadow was on an incline, sloping down to the road and away from the likely direction of the other shooter, he decided to crawl on his belly in that direction, doing his best to plan a path that included every tuft of grass taller than a rabbit, and every rock of any size to crawl behind. The saddlebags were trapped irretrievably underneath the horse, so Davin took his loaded gun, carving bag, and ammunition pouch, and set off on an uncomfortable and slow trek, his thighs screaming with each scraping pull forward. When another bullet thudded into the ground to Davin's left, he knew his enemy had repositioned himself close to where the first gunman had died. Davin shuffled quickly behind a squat cairn of rocks and stopped, reaffixing the bandage that the dragging had pulled loose. He could see the road now between the trees. A man with a rifle rode back and forth on sentry along the lane, eyes scouring what he could of the field. Davin was lining him up for a shot when a bullet cracked the topmost rock on the pile he hid behind, sending chips and stone dust all over him. While the shot foiled his aim, it also had an unintended consequence. The rider stopped dead in his tracks and searched the field. He and his horse framed nicely between two poplar trees. Davin dropped him immediately. Just one more. The last rifleman clearly had a bead on the rock pile, and Davin knew better than to poke his head up. He waited, flexing his leg to test it, grimacing at the stinging pain. Another shot hit the highest rock on the cairn, but this time Davin surged to his feet. He knew roughly how long it took to reload a rifle, and he half ran, half stumbled toward the road before throwing himself into a shallow gully, by far the best cover he had managed during the entire affair. The road was tantalizingly close, and so was his last victim's horse, now chewing the grass in the ditch on the far side of the roadway. 20 feet separated him from the cover of the trees. If he could trick the shooter into squeezing off another round, he might just make it. For the next few minutes, he tried everything he could think of, from raising his hat to throwing rocks to make sounds nearby. None of it worked. To hit him in the gully, the shooter would have to reposition himself closer to the road, and that is where Davin could not afford for him to go. He could wait no longer. With a silent prayer to the eternal flame, he bolted from the gully and sprinted for the trees as fast as his gimpy leg would allow, weaving slightly left and right to make himself harder to hit. And it worked. He reached the trees without a shot being fired, and cautiously approached the feeding horse. It startled at his touch, but with a firm hand on the reins and a soothing pat, it accepted his mastery. He mounted just as large drops of rain started to fall and spurred the horse on. The rifle report sounded in his ears and a bullet bit into his left shoulder. The impact drove him to the right and he clutched the saddle horn to stay on the horse. The animal lurched forward and he urged it on, pain running like fire down his leg and throbbing in his shoulder. Hunkering down over the neck of the horse, he hung on for dear life. 3 hours to Belshire at least. Maybe Ariane had been right after all. Melkor Rains shook his head in disbelief. The underclerk had dropped his 3 hard men with 3 very precise shots. Such a feat of marksmanship was extraordinary, even better than what he himself could manage. Even so, it was nothing compared to what had happened in Harrickshire. Melkor had hired those men, too, to stage the fake assassination attempt. The Earl of Longford had supposedly killed those 3 with well-aimed shots to the head as well, but Melkor had harboured doubts that any drunken lord could have pulled it off. It was unlikely a sober one could have. But the lord's overly modest behaviour afterward was even more mysterious and out of character. It was all making sense now. Hadn't this underclerk been at Harrickshire as well? Whoever he was clearly not just a clerk and was very likely one of the Queen's agents undercover. If the Queen had placed him in the Boot and Wheel Caravan Company, then she had probably had some notion that something was amiss for longer than he or Ambassador Clout had originally thought. Fortunately, it appeared the clerk had left behind the critical bits of evidence that would lead to implicating some of the noble Bittermarchian turncoats. Not so fortunately, the evidence was trapped under a dead horse. Melkor exhaled roughly as the rain pounded down from the leaden sky. His training as a member of the elite Fist of Cretus had not provided him with any instruction on how to extract items from underneath dead animals in a driving rainstorm. While he had some ideas, they were all messy, and with the storm they would all be muddy. What he did have, however, was an iron will to do what had to be done, and a sticky memory. Mr. David Harper, supposed underclerk of Queen Philippa, would pay for this inconvenience, provided he didn't bleed out before he got to Belshire.